So Corbin Collins sat in the office of Apple Valley Community Church, and his head was in his hands. He was silent for a long time. What's happening to my life? What have I done? Why is this happening to me? He said. You know, his whole world had been kind of turned upside down in the last just 24 hours. This was a man who had been at the top of the world in many ways. This is one of the best known faces on television. A guy who was, you'd see his face on the side of a bus. Because he was the star host of the hit reality TV show Extreme Life Makeover, this, you know, big TV series about extravagant generosity and how it can change people's lives. But on the inside, even though, you know, when there was all the show going on, he was an empty man. He was tired, cynical, and just kind of fed up with the games that we play, with all the shenanigans that go along with corporate sponsorship and whose logo was on what and how much airtime everybody gets. He was just sick and tired of it. And so, well, he threw a bit of a temper tantrum and made off on a cross-country trip and wishing all the way along that he could just start over as a brand new person. And, well, in a funny sort of way, he got his wish. He was in a minor car accident that had him delayed in the little hick town of Apple Valley. Broke his phone in the process, so he couldn't call anyone. And even weirder, somehow in that process, his appearance was changed. So, you know, he was virtually unrecognizable, even to himself. So he didn't look like the face on his ID. And so when there was a search out for him, because, you know, he was this big celebrity who was missing, I mean, his credit cards were frozen. Nobody would believe his story. And so he ended up with no ID, no phone, no money, and nowhere to stay. Coming through the doors of Apple Valley Community Church, and that's where he met Doris. And Doris was just one of these neat, I mean, just a woman that had been involved in children's ministry her whole life, and was one of the first really caring people that he'd encountered on this journey. She asked him questions that he hadn't really been asked, at least not in a long time, like, how are you? How are you? Do you have a place to stay? Do you have enough to eat? Well, and then they offered a phone. And so he was all excited because he made this phone call. And so he phoned his agent only to discover in the process of doing that that over the last 24 hours while his life was falling apart, well, there was a whole bunch of other things happening as well. I guess a little tirade that he had done a few weeks back with about something involving a corporate sponsor. Well, it got on the internet and it went viral and everybody had seen it. And so all the sponsors had dropped the show. The network had just overnight, just dumped it. And so not only was he in a personal crisis, he was in a professional crisis. Everything was gone. So that's why his head was in his hands. What is going on with my life? He says. And that's where wise old Doris, she said something that kind of rubbed him the wrong way, but she said, you know, honey, God's got a plan for you. And when she said some other stuff too, he wasn't, it was just so hard to hear. You know, what do you mean? Nice plan. This is going really great, huh? God's got a plan for you, she said. Well, we're in a series in the book of James, and we've been going through this book that that Jesus' younger brother James wrote about 2,000 years ago to young Christians, just talking about how to live out your faith. And right now we're in chapter 4, and this is actually the last week in the series. And I'm a little bit, I kind of wish that there was another week or two before Easter so I could finish off the rest of the book. And I'm not going to finish it off today. We're just going to finish off chapter 4. But there's this one incredibly powerful idea that I so much want us to hear, and I really believe is God's God's reminder to us today. So in your Bibles, as you're finding James chapter 4, and we're starting with verse 13, I want to kind of run an illustration by you. I was thinking this week about my favorite carnival ride as a kid. I think the guys especially are going to relate to this one. Like in kindergarten and in first grade, when the carnival would come through town, they would set this one up where there was these like airplanes or especially helicopters, and you'd sit in them and you'd pull the lever and you could go up. And if you push it, you go down. Remember that one? Come on. Right? And so you're riding around in it. And I remember thinking, this bad boy is awesome because I am driving the heckacaca. If I had one of these bad boys, I would just take it to school. And I wouldn't need to walk home anymore. I had one of these things, I would just get in my helicopter. I'd pull the lever and see ya, suckers. I'm driving my heckacaca. I have such control. I have ultimate control. In my helicopter, I can go up when I want, and I can go down when I want. I can go up, down. I can do whatever I want, because I am the driver of my heckacaca. You ever do that as a kid? Guys, especially, so exciting. You know, the driving carnival games. But here's the thing. Are you really driving the helicopter? Well, you sort of are, right? Because you have control. You have control over up and down. You have control of that. But you really don't have control over when the ride ends. And you don't have control over where the ride is going. You're just going round and round on a carnival ride. Your fate is determined by some guy in pants that don't fit. You ever notice that? I don't know. Maybe it's just me. There's always like the carnival workers, their pants are like four sizes too big, and so they're cinched up with a belt, and they kind of look like they don't want to be hey, kid, you just help me having a great ride. I pull up my pants. Anyway, the whole thing. Maybe there's carnival workers here, and if so, I am sorry. I'm not meaning to offend your career choice. But it's just funny. You know, you do the stuff, and you're so excited about this sense of control, and you really do have some control. But I mean, we look at this as adults and we go, oh, that's just really sweet, isn't it? Oh. But we do this all the time as adults, and that's the big idea in the passage we're going to be looking at today. Just would you read with me? So we're in James chapter 4 with verse 13. It says this: Now listen. You who say, today or tomorrow we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business, and make money. That'd be nice. Why, you don't even know what will happen tomorrow. And then so what is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Like the fog that you might have seen on the river this morning. Like when it's cold out and you breathe into the air and you can see your breath. We're like that. Here one day and tomorrow, we're gone. And we don't control when the carnival ride ends. We just get to pull the stick and decide whether or not we go up or down on the ride. We don't determine where we end up in the circle either. We just control up or down. That's what we get. Verse 15. Instead, James writes, instead, you ought to say, if it's the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. Verse 16, as it is, you boast in your, what's the word? Arrogant. You boast in your arrogant schemes. All such boasting is evil. I mean, it's cute for a kid to think that he's driving the helicopter. I remember as a kid really thinking I was. But what if we actually go into adult life thinking that in life we are the ones that life revolves around? We're the ones in control. We can't know tomorrow. We don't control tomorrow. We do the things we can to try to live long and be healthy and, you know, so you eat your broccoli and go work on the treadmill, and that's great. I'm glad you do. I hope you do. But we don't choose when the carnival ride ends. And the word that the Bible uses to describe it when we feel like we have is arrogant. As if we actually determine our own future. We choose what opportunities come our way or what doesn't. When all we really have is we have the choice of what to do with what we're given in any given moment. We do have control. Up, down. Or a professor of mine put it like this, and I was kind of like this. It's a slightly more sophisticated illustration, I guess, than a carnival ride. But the idea of life is a little bit like a dance with, like we're dancing with God. And God is stronger and he's bigger and he's the one that leads the dance. If he wants to lead you across the dance floor, he will lead you across the dance floor. If he wants you to turn and spin, eventually you will turn and spin. But the choices that you can make and the influence that we do have, you get to determine is this going to be a clunky dance because I'm just trying to resist you all the time and we're stepping on each other's toes and everybody's all bandaged up and bruised, or do I go with it and let him lead? And then verse 17. And it's the final verse I want to just talk about today. And maybe just like the helicopter ride, it'd be smart if we buckle up before we really read this one. It says, if anyone then knows the good they ought to do and doesn't do it, it's sin for them. If anyone then knows the good they ought to do and doesn't do it, it's sin for them. Because all we have is this moment. All we really have any control over, any influence on, is what we do today. Now, not everything that we experience in life is necessarily all exactly what God has planned for us. I mean, because we are interacting with our own sin and the way that that affects things and the brokenness of the world around us. So there's so much we don't control, but we can control what we do with what we are given. And so the question that I hope will press on our hearts today is, what is God telling you to do? And will you do it? I mean, really, what are you afraid of and what are you putting it off for? Because what we have is today. And that's all we have influence on, is today. And the choices you make today. Because wouldn't it be sad if you get to the end of life, and I'm just going to put myself in that spot where you think, okay, there's conversations that they kind of linger in my, like, I should have that discussion with this person. But I don't really want to do it because I mean, there's risk of rejection, and what if I say the wrong thing? And so maybe I don't. And you think, so now what if tomorrow the carnival ride ends for me? I get unbuckled from the helicopter and I have to let go of the stick. Well, here lies Andrew. He was going to forgive that person. He really intended to. But he never did. Here lies Andrew. He had the best of intentions about being generous and just, you know, trying to leave a legacy that would demonstrate his trust in God. But he didn't. You know, he meant to reach out to his neighbors. He really did. I mean, he was thinking about it, and he even prayed about it. But he didn't. What's God putting on your heart? Oftentimes when we think about sins, we think about the sins of commission, you know, the things that we don't do out of faithfulness. You know, we don't lie, or we don't cheat, or we don't commit adultery, or, you know, don't, it's bad. And we don't, and we shouldn't. But there's also a category of sin, that the sins of omission, the things that we know we should do, and we just don't do it. To stand up for justice, to live a life of generosity, to speak the truth in love, to leave a legacy with your family, to model grace in your workplace, to tell the people around us about the love of Christ. Now, the way that God leads us is going to be very, very unique. I mean, I'm assuming that even as this verse is on the screen, and I hope you're letting God speak to you through it, the specifics of it are going to be as individual as every person in this room and every story in this room. I mean, God puts you in particular places, in your family, in your work environment, because he has a unique plan for you. And there are things that are on your heart. So what is that? And what do you plan to do with that today? There are two documents that all of us have that more than anything else demonstrate what we truly believe. Not just what we say we believe, but what we actually believe. And many of you, you've got it on your smartphone right now. I brought these things up just to illustrate them. This is one of the little notebooks that I keep with me a lot. I keep my to-do lists in that. It's my calendar. Your calendar is a theological document that speaks to what you truly believe. And so, in your calendar, it might be that then God is a priority, and so somehow worship is a priority, and the connecting with the Christians around you is a priority, and Sabbath is a priority, and taking times to rest and reflect. Places of service are a priority. If this calendar belongs to Jesus, in one way, shape, or form, those things will be there. Isn't it funny the games we play with God sometimes? You know, God, I'm going to worship you on your day. And you know, if you do a good job with it, I might give you another day. You've done a good job. I went to church and I gave you a couple hours of my time. And I walked away and I felt good. I felt really good. You did a good job there, God. Thank you. Next week, I'm going to give you more time. Hey, yay for me. We kind of think like that, don't we, sometimes? And yet, from God's perspective, it's like the kid going around on the helicopter like, wow, I'm driving. Look at me, I'm driving. The other theological document that tells what you believe is your checkbook. Now, most of us don't carry checkbooks anymore, but Jesus said, where your treasure is, there your heart is. We all of us invest in the things that matter the most to us. We always do. The question is, what, as you look at, you put the resources that have been entrusted to you by God. Oh, God, I'm going to give you some of my money, and if you do a good job with it, I'll give you some more. But your bank statement will tell you what you believe and what you value the most. So what's it saying? What's it saying? If anyone then knows the good they ought to do and doesn't do it, it's sin for them. So I just like us to spend a minute or two in prayer. And I'm just believing that just through verses like this, God's nudging your heart, nudging mine. And the question is, what are you going to do with the day that God has given you today? Today. With the moments that you have today. With the things he's called you to today. What do you do with that? What do I do with that? Lord, thank you for, thanks for an amazing carnival ride. That we've been given a measure of control. We get to determine so many things about how we spend our day. But Lord, please guard us. Guard us. Guard me, God, from the arrogance of thinking that it's my time. As if I controlled where the carnival ride is going or when the ride is over. And God, I pray for myself and I pray for my friends that we would be faithful with the time that you have given us. And Lord, I just believe that there are things that you, even now by the Holy Spirit, are speaking to people. Conversations to have. Commitments to make. Forgiveness to be offered. Steps of obedience, both large and small. Lord, may the things that you do in our midst, may they fall on like a fertile soil so that your words can take root in our lives and grow and do something good. And Lord, may we be people that trust you. Whatever circumstance we find ourselves in, may we look for the redemptive opportunity in it and just trust you, trust that you're in control and that you are good. Thank you that you are, Jesus. Amen. And so Doris, as she was talking with Corbin, said, well, we need to find you a place to stay tonight. And so they made some calls, and there was some room at the shelter just a few miles down the road. And they didn't really know him too well, so they thought, for tonight, we best just do that. And so one of the men from the church drove him down there. And then on Doris's phone call, Clarence, the guy who owned the local garage, showed up there the next morning to pick him up. He took him out to breakfast and said, you know, hey, if you're going to be around, you're going to be around Apple Valley for at least a few days while we get your car fixed. Why don't we find you something to do? So offered him a part-time job at the garage. And Corbin discovered he kind of liked the community. It was neat to be in a spot away from the bustle and the lights and the pressure. And he grew to love the people of Apple Valley and the people of Apple Valley Community Church. You know, as they got to know him and they got to see that he was actually, you know, quite good with developing teams and motivating people, the pastor went up to him and said, "Hey, you know, hey, I was wondering if you would be open to leading one of our service projects." And Corbin said, "Yes." Anyways, long story short, if you were to go there now, many years after the fact, you might walk through the doors of Apple Valley Community Services, and behind the desk you would see an older man, pretty quiet, but also pretty contented. And if you listen to him talk long enough, you might, just like some of the other people end up there, they would say, "You know, you remind me so much of that guy who used to be on TV. What was his name? Oh, man, it was on some show. Corbin, you remind me of that guy. You like your voice and your mannerisms. It's so much like him." And the guy across the table would say, "You know, I've heard that before. Did you know Corbin's my middle name? But what can I do for you today? What can I do for you today?" The end.